Welcome to the We Are Never Alone workshop of WCNA. I'm an addict. My name is Ron. Can we please open this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I've asked a friend to read What is the Narcotics Anonymous Program.
Hi, I'm Andrea, and I'm an addict. Hi, what is the Narcotics Anonymous Program? NA is a non-profit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs had become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you used or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I've asked another friend to read Why Are We Here?
Hi, I'm Chuck, and I'm an addict. I'm from Billings, Montana, and so is Andrea. Before returning to the fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own lives. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, or psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffered from the disease. We suffered from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is then possible. Thank you.
At this time, I'd like to introduce our first speaker from Montana, Roberta.
I'm an addict. My name's Berta. Hi. That happens to me every time I speak. Microphone's way too high. I'm really nervous. I've been thinking about this for months, and I never really actually came up with what I was going to say. Then Mike reminded me I do know my name, so I can say that. I was thinking about my past, and I thought I should tell you a little bit about me when I was using. You know, I was the girl, and I was a girl. I got clean when I was 18, so when I was a young girl, I would go to parties, and I would be really loaded, and people saw me there, but nobody ever knew who I was. I'd just be that girl. They were like, who's that girl? She's so stoned. Who's that? You know, who'd she come with? You know, and like nobody knew who I was. So there's always that person in a crowd that was always alone. When I was in high school, my one and only friend got into a wreck. She was run over and she was killed. And at the hospital, her family and our other friends all knew that I should be contacted, but nobody knew who I was to call me. Nobody had my phone number. Nobody remembered what my last name was. Nobody knew how to call me. So I found out about my best friend's death from my foster mom, who went, hey, what's that girl you're hanging out with? Amy? Oh, she died, you know. And I mean, that's my life to a T. It's like nobody knows who I am. I've always felt alone. I've always felt different, separate from, you know, in my family, I am the shortest one. In my family, I'm the fattest one. I never even felt like my brothers and sisters. I always felt different from. And that kind of using was one of those things that made it okay to be who I was, to be as different as I was. And when that stopped working, I had no idea what I was going to do. I would be completely alone in this world. There was nothing. Because obviously, if you'd asked my parents, I had no God. I was godless. And I had nobody liked me. My last couple nights of using, I went down to get a pack of cigarettes, and a group of my friends brought a girl. They had a girl in the car, and she jumped out, and they totally encouraged her to kill me. And, you know, I walked away from that. I had a fight, and I walked away bloodied, and so did she. And at that point, I realized, like, even getting loaded ain't never going to make this better. I can't make any connection with anybody anywhere. Nobody likes me. I don't like me. I might as well die. And that's kind of where I was at my bottom. And I ended up, somebody called the cops and all that crap. And instead of taking me to jail, they took me to the psych ward. And they're like, oh, man, you got a problem. And I'm like, yeah, about 3 hours, I'll be dead, so it won't matter. Because at that point, I'd taken a bunch of pills, and so they pumped my stomach and all that fun stuff. And then they locked me up in a little room, and then they sent me to treatment. And in treatment, I found that, you know, if you don't tell them anything about you, they don't know, and they might like you, especially if you can get them pot in treatment. And that's kind of what I did. I had a boyfriend, and I got stoned in treatment, and I never made the connection. I didn't get it. You know, I decided to go to another program and stay sober, and that was easy because I was stoned. You know, well, it's not a problem. And so those people at those other meetings, they liked me, you know, because I was mellow. Yeah. I wasn't a hyper newcomer. I'm like, oh, fine. You know, because I'd go to a meeting, go home, smoke a doobie. And it was easy, you know. And that's another thing. I quit all the hard stuff. I'm just going to smoke pot. It'll be all right. You know, and go to another 12-step program. And one day, I'm living at the YWCA, and I'm bumming rides to meetings, and I asked the lady down the hall, who also was in the program, and I said, well, I need a ride to a meeting. She said, oh, hey, man, that's cool. It's Monday night, and I go to NA on Monday nights, and you're more than welcome, but I'll give you a ride. And I was like, Wait a minute. They don't use drugs there, right? And she was like, oh, yeah, yeah. So I'm not sure I want to go there, and I'm not sure I'd fit in. And she goes, oh, yeah, yeah. There's men you haven't met yet. Oh, I'll go. I did. And I did. And I went. And it was weird. I have to tell you guys, something happened at that first NA meeting that was amazing. I walked in, and I was at home. I was at home like I had never been anywhere. My mom had drugged me to church after church. At 18, for 9 years, I'd been in therapy with, I can't tell you how many therapists. You know, treatment, AA, everywhere I had ever gone, never felt like this. I went in, and these were my own. And I connected on a level I never thought was possible. Ever. At 18, I still really didn't want to use or live very much, but at that meeting, I got that hope that life could be different and maybe I can make a connection with people, you know? And it was great. I went home. I smoked a doobie. I was like, whoa, I'm going back there. These guys are cool. But I had no idea how to handle it, you know, so I kept coming back, and I became the first step poster child for the Helena group. It was the survivors group back then, you know. It was great. We were just switching seats on the Titanic. Didn't matter what drug of choice it was, we were going down, we just didn't know it. So we called ourselves the survivors group. And I kept coming back, and they got so sick of having first step meetings for me. Oh, they did. So they finally had an into action meeting, and they said, okay, what you need to do is call somebody, and we'll give you phone numbers. That's amazing. They give me their phone numbers, man. So you need to call somebody before you smoke that doobie tonight. Okay, you know? And that's what they did for me. That was back in the day, and we didn't know a lot better then. And so everybody in the group signed it, so I called all the men, you know, till I found one willing. And when I wanted to use, and, you know, this is unreal. This guy just got out of prison. He's living in an apartment. I call him, and he says, 10 minutes. I'll be there 10 minutes. I said, okay. All right, 10 minutes you be here or I'm going to use. And he's like, I'll be there. So I wait about 5 minutes, maybe, and I leave, and I start walking. And Helena is not a big city. There's, I don't know, about 50,000 people there. Not a lot. And I start walking down the street, and he pulls up in this car with some other guy. He jumps out. He goes, where are you going? Well, I waited. He goes, not long. And he took me to his house, and he fed me tea and pancakes for, I don't know, because that's what he learned to cook in prison. And he talked to me, and he didn't try to beg me, and he didn't try to get anything from me, and he just talked to me. And I made it through that night without getting clean. And that was it. That was it. I knew I could do this, you know? I knew I could do it because I wasn't alone. I kept going, and I finally went back clean. You know, when I got money, on my way to the dealer's house, I stopped by the meeting just to tell them, I got money, I'm going to my dealer's. And they went, oh no, buy a book. So I did. And they said, and you got a sponsor? And I was like, oh, and I was thinking about it. And they go ask her. And I did. And so I got a sponsor and a book instead of a bag. And that worked. Through that first maybe year or so, 6 months or so, I don't know, 6 months to a year, pretty much all I did was not use. People took me to their houses and just let me vibrate. And they let me survive there. I couldn't really talk and I couldn't really think. And they still let me hang out with them. And they didn't try to kill me, and they didn't try to steal from me, and they didn't try to screw me over. You know, it was weird. Not like anything I'd ever known in my entire life. I don't know. But I made that connection, and I stayed. And eventually, 6 months clean, they found out, I think they found out I was Jewish, and they made me treasurer. They figured I could handle money. And since then, I've been treasurer of every flipping thing in Montana, often at the same time. I mean, at our last convention, we call them gatherings, too. At our last gathering, I made a deposit with 7 different accounts. Like, I need to give up some of this service work. This is getting crazy. But they made me do that, and they made me go to prison. That was interesting, women's prison. And we set up an H&I meeting in there, and some women, I thought, oh my God, I relate to them. I'm one of these really weird people. I go into the women's prison for service work, and I feel like, oh, I'm home. You know, because I can't imagine, like, why I'm not there, except for the fact that Narcotics Anonymous entered my life as I became an adult. You know, had I stayed out there a year longer, I'd have been in prison with the rest of them. So I feel really comfortable when I go into the Women's Correctional Center in Montana. And I did that for a number of years. And I love it. They moved the prison away from me. When it was 90 miles from my house to the prison, I would go every week. But now that they've moved it like 400 and some miles away, I can't go every week. It's just too far. But I made that connection. And I don't know. I've been lucky to be in the fellowship and in Montana. And I have like the greatest home group in the world. When the survivors group decided that they couldn't follow the traditions and that they needed, their message kind of got a little skewed, a number of us decided that we needed to start our own group. And that's how small the town is, right? There's one group. And so we started another group. And it became the Last Chance group because the main street in Helena is Last Chance Gulch. So we thought the name was appropriate. It was our last chance. And we started this group. And this group was more to my liking because they did more what I said. They followed the traditions the way I thought they should. You know. But despite that, it still survives today, and it is the best home group in the world, and I love it. I'm so very grateful that I've gotten to have most of my recovery in the Last Chance group of Narcotics Anonymous, because that's where I found a home. And this is unreal. I got to tell you guys, I have no friends from my early days of life, but I have friends that have been in this group for 16, 17 years. That's unreal. They still like me. It's unreal. I piss them off regularly because I think I know it all sometimes. And they've forgiven me. We've gone, I have this one good friend, this couple, Rick and Prudy, and me and my husband are Rick and Berta, right? And we didn't talk to them for like a year because they didn't know what they were talking about, and we didn't know what we were talking about, you know? And they're my best friends. We went a whole year, and now we're talking again. And not only that, Prudy is my sponsor, you know? It works. I've learned how to be in a relationship with other people, to love and to forgive, to get pissed off and to piss people off and to let it go, you know? That's not something I learned anywhere else. When I was using, you pissed me off, you're out of here, I'm done. I just walk away and never look back. You know, and I've done that with my family. I've done that with friends. I have a little brother I haven't talked to for 6 years because he does it too. My sister does it. She'll only talk to me when she needs something, you know. And it's a family trait that I've had to learn to overcome in Narcotics Anonymous. Not everybody does things my way, and that's okay. They still love me, and I still love them, and I'm really grateful for that. I've been talking the last couple meetings right before I left. I said, we had a couple of meetings on this topic, never long. That was our theme for our gathering last year, by the way. My T-shirt is from last year's gathering. Says, never alone, never again. So I was like, woo. There must be some sort of higher power to ask me to do this workshop. But we've had some meetings on never being alone. And I told people, like, say something great because I'm going to use it when I go to my workshop. Of course, I can't remember what anybody said, but but I'm here. You know, and I've been really nervous, fretting. I was going to write this all down and make sure I knew what I was going to say, have it all prepared, sound great. You know, pearls of wisdom were going to drop out of my mouth. You guys were all going to be healed. It was going to be great. You know, and then I talked to a friend of mine, Katie, and she's like, what do you think? And she's like, fuck no. Oh, excuse me. That's what she said. And she said, wing it. Do it from the heart. It'll be fine. Oh. So if you're not inspired or moved, it's her fault right there. Yeah. But as I was coming here, I was feeling freaked out. And I've been really lucky because I got to come to this convention with my husband, who 13-stepped me. I had a month. He had 4. And, you know, we've been together now. It'll be 18 years in November. We've been together. Yeah. So he and I and our 3 wonderful children who've never had to see me messed up, who've never had to see me doing, oh, God, horrible things, they got to come. And we came with 2 of our best friends, Chuck and Don. They're from Helena. And then we met up with all these other people we didn't know were coming from Montana. And I mean, it is just, it's incredible. And then we're at the airport in Denver. We had 1 layover. And we're just sitting there. And these really nice people from Albuquerque came up to us and go, hey, going to the convention? And we're like, how'd you know? We were, and they're like, oh, your t-shirt. Yeah! Yeah! It was unreal. And then I go, oh, duh. I don't get these things. People make connections because we want to be connected. And I can't tell you how many times over and over I've seen them. Oh, hey, look, there's somebody else I know. Oh, look, there's somebody else I know. And I'm making that connection. I'm waiting in lines to go to restaurants, and there's other members of Narcotics Anonymous, and I have no problem going, oh, where are you from? How you doing? You know, is this your first convention? And I'm a part of it. And you guys, it's so cool. It's just an amazing thing to me to have people who, you know, still let me hang around and don't want to kill me. It's amazing. And who make me feel comfortable and feel at home. There's a really nice girl that I met over at the park at Magic Island. Bought me a rose. Oh, it was so sweet. She was so nice. She's from Wisconsin. That was way cool. Just 2 states over. Oh, my God. And I've been really, really walking around. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard people go, yep, don't matter where you go, you're never alone. And it's been weird. It's like I'll sit in a restaurant and hear people say that stuff. And I'm like, wow, yeah, that's exactly right. And I'm not alone. And I never have to suffer that isolation and alone that I feel in my head. I have a connection to a power greater than myself. I know there's something else out there that isn't condemning me to hell because I'm a bad girl, you know. I have a loving higher power. I have this fellowship. This fellowship was my first higher power. And then I realized that as great as all of us are together, there's something even better. You know, and I made a connection there. That was an amazing thing. I don't know. I'm just tickled to be here. This is my first convention. having kids and having a mortgage, like, costs money, and so I don't get to a lot of things way outside my state anymore. This was really cool to be asked to come and to be able to afford it without having to sell anybody, you know. That was kind of cool. I don't know. I'm really grateful. And for each and every one of you who's been kind and just given me a hug or said hello, aloha, or hey, where are you from, or whatever, I thank you. You made me feel I'm not alone. I'm not here on this planet all by myself. And I'm grateful to each and every single one of you. I'm glad to be here today, Cleveland in Recovery. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, our next speakers might be from Canada.
Aloha.
Oh,
my name is Mike and I'm an addict. Very nervous addict. I guess I'm the opposite. I have to move it up. You know, I'm always amazed at how nervous I am when I get up here. Because this is not my first time speaking. This is actually the third world convention that I speak at a workshop. It's also my ninth world convention. I've also spoken right across Canada and a lot of different places in the United States. Oh. But I always feel like the first time I ever spoke, we were talking earlier about that, it was like 6 months clean and just my knees were shaking, my heart was beating, and it's like every time I get up here, I'm right back at that place. But I'm also reminded of a piece of advice that was given to me one of the early times I spoke to help calm my nervousness. You'd think they would have said, oh, pray, but that wasn't the advice. The advice was just look out into the crowd and picture everybody sitting there naked. And I thought about that, and I thought, oh, geez, that's one of those defects I'm trying to get rid of. Still am, I guess. it's great to be here. Thank the convention committee for giving me this opportunity to speak to you today. And what I'm going to share is my experience, strength, and hope with the programs Narcotics Anonymous and how I stayed clean today. It's just incredible, you know. My home group is the clean and free group in Portage la Prairie on Thursday night in Canada. You're all welcome to come by. It's a very special group. We have a youth treatment center in our community for 13 to 17 year olds, and they come out every Thursday night. And that part in our literature where it says regardless of age is so true. You know, if you get young people at your meeting, don't say, oh, it's so good to have you here. Oh, I wish I was your age when I got here. Listen to what they have to say, and whether you're 15, 25, 35, 45, 55, the hurt, the pain is the same. You know, that age really doesn't matter. So give them a break. Accept them for who they are, not for because they're young. And don't point that out, you know. It makes them feel different, you know. And that's not what we're about. We're here to welcome everybody. I don't know what brought that on. I kind of, like I say, I didn't. The first time I ever spoke, I wrote it all out and memorized it. Now I don't do that. I just show up. But one of the things about being here is like also, we got here just over a week ago and went touring all the islands and Maui and the Big Island and then came here. And partly is, I don't know when I will ever get the opportunity to be in Hawaii again. You know, the convention committee didn't consult me, but I think December, January, February would have been a nice time to have this convention. When in my home, we have snow this deep. Well, those of you listening to the tape, I'm putting about 4 feet. And the temperature is like minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit or Celsius. They're the same at that level. And every so often, we get this lovely little thing called wind chill, which when it gets into the minus 40 to 50 range, your skin can freeze in less than a minute. But even at August, September, this place is paradise. You know, I've just been having such a great time. And what's really amazing is we're out on the Hana Highway and we stop, pull over and go traipsing through the jungle. And it's like in the middle of the jungle, we're walking and similar experience. And all these people says, oh, all right, are you here for the convention? Instead of wearing NA shirts, you know, right in the middle of the jungle. It's so cool, you know. And the same thing, we were out in the volcano on the Big Island and ran into some people there, you know. And it's like, whoa, cool. You know, it really is a worldwide fellowship. You know, wherever I go in the world today, there is Narcotics Anonymous. And that's something that I am so grateful for. Because for me personally, it has not always been that way. I farthest memories as a kid, I remember, you know, that I believed that if you knew who I was, you wouldn't like me. And if you didn't like me, you would reject me. and I'd be alone. And I always felt alone. My life was lived like that. I'd wear different kind of masks so that you'd like me, you know. And I don't remember my parents ever sitting me down and saying, okay, this is rule number one. Don't tell anybody what goes on in our house. But somehow I figured that out by myself, that I wasn't supposed to tell you what was going on in my house. So I had to keep that a secret. What that meant to me is that I was different, you know. And being different, I felt alone. I'm the only one. And that's a lonely place to be. Turns out, after listening to a few of you share over the years, that I wasn't the only one. And most of us came from the same dysfunctional house that I came from. And I'm sure if I would have talked to the kids in my neighborhood at that time, they would have been in the same kind of dysfunctional home that I was in. But I learned that I had to keep that secret, that I was different. So I didn't share that stuff. And as time went on, I stayed more isolated within myself. I was one of these people that was the life of the party. I always had a large number of people. I moved around a lot, but I was always able to make friends very easily. You know, I was never very often physically alone. There was always people around me. But inside, I was always so alone. You know, and always felt that nobody really liked me, and that I don't know why they were there. I just felt that emptiness and aloneness inside. Part of it comes from that I didn't feel good enough about me, and I did not, I felt different. You know, I'm the only one. And as my using progressed, I kind of started to get into physical isolation, you know, physical aloneness. You know, I start to get paranoid around crowds and fearful of crowds. But the real reason, I didn't want to share my drugs with you. You know, but when I hit a dry spell, I'd come and be your best friend until your drugs ran out. And that's the way I lived my life until I came into Narcotics Anonymous. And it was a strange experience, you know, because I walked into the room and people smiled and said, welcome. When I left, they said, keep coming back. And that was kind of strange for me. Because near the end of my using, especially the last couple of years, I was not welcomed in a lot of places. People didn't smile when I walked in the door. They didn't say, keep coming back when I left. You know. And here, they smiled, wanted me to come back. Kind of wondered, what's their game? What do they want? What's the catch? They said, no catch. We just want to freely give you what was given to us. Oh, yeah. All right. I stuck around long enough to find the catch. They wanted to give me what was given to them so they could stay clean another day. You know, and that's what I do today. I give away what was freely given to me so that I can stay clean another day. You know, I'm fortunate, very early in my recovery, I learned something. You know, it's a very painful way to learn this. One of my cousins that I grew up with, we were very, very close, was shot and killed outside a bar when I was just over 2 months clean. And it hit me really hard. You know, I remember at home crying. At home, not in the rooms. I wasn't ready to do that yet. You know, but alone at home I could cry. And it was the first time I cried because it hurt. And I went to the funeral, I went to the wake and all that. And it was about a week or two later that I had an awakening. It's like, wow, I felt it, I experienced it, I shared about it, and I didn't even think about using. But damn, that program's working. Because I still was not sure if this was for me, because you told me, keep coming back till you figure it out if it's for you or not. But one of the things that I did learn that day was that no matter what happens, I don't have to use today. You know, and I haven't had to. You know, I've been clean ever since. You know, I've done a lot since that. The steps, several times, meetings, sponsorship, service. You know, I keep doing those things. They told me that if I did those four things that I could stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. I've done those things, and I stopped using, I've lost the desire, and I have a new way to live today. That new way to live is beyond anything I could imagine. It's like, I'm in Hawaii. I must have 300 pictures of palm trees with blue sky in the background. No palm trees where I come from. But if you want a real nice Christmas tree. You know, and as I started going to meetings, you know, I connected with a sponsor. You know, they told me in treatment, get a sponsor right away before I left. And I remember asking this guy, he gave me his phone number, and I said, thanks, but I won't call you right away because I'm in treatment, everything's good. He suggested something to me I didn't follow. He said, well, don't wait till they're bad, phone me. Of course, I smiled and said, okay, and didn't. Used instead. But gratefully, I did come back to the meetings, you know, and started talking to him after meetings. Started going to coffee and talking to him. And I slowly started to connect with somebody, you know. And one of the things that really happened was I started listening and hearing other people's stories and realizing that, whoa, I'm not the only one, you know. This person felt that. That person done this. Whoa, I didn't do what that guy did, but figure if I go back, I can. So maybe I should stay here today. You know, and learn stuff. And that whole idea about just not being alone, that other people felt what I had felt. You know, and it took away that I'm the only one. You know, being the only one is such a lonely place to be. And I don't have to be there anymore. You know, I've had the opportunity to serve from my group level, area, region, national, zonal forums, and the World Service Conference. You know, so I've had the opportunity to meet people from around the world. As I mentioned, this is my 9th World Convention. And it's so cool meeting people that I've met in other places, like every day, starting from Wednesday when I've gotten in line halfway around the block to register, you know, running into people that I've known over the years. And some of these people, it's like I've known for close to 20 years. You know, I generally don't get too excited about my clean dates, but I did get really excited about my 10th year clean. I'm not sure why. I think it's because on the medallion there's a nice big X, so I could be X-rated. I got really excited about my 11th year clean because I used for 11 years. I started when I was 12. I cleaned up when I was 23. So when I hit 11 years clean, that was a big milestone for me. It was like, all right, I broke even. Now I'm in the profits. This year, my clean day too, I've been excited like, my clean date's October, early October, and I've been excited like since November about my clean date anniversary this year. Because it's like, I kind of feel like I'm going to officially be an old timer. I hit 20 years clean next month. So. Thank you. And I couldn't have done that alone. You know, every single one of you, you know, have played a part in my recovery by sitting here. You know, and it's like, the thing is that I had to reach out and ask for help. That was so hard. Because I'm a big, tough guy. Like, but look at this, I'm wearing shorts. And runners. Not my regular jeans and boots. You know, I'm not even wearing my leather vest. It's too hot here. You know? But today I don't have to wear all that armor, you know. And I can be comfortable with the way I am. And that's thanks to you guys. You know, so it's like I had to reach out and ask for help. And that was so hard. But I found something even harder, is once I asked for the help, was to accept it, you know, let you help me. And it's funny, you know, when I think about some of this stuff, because out in the street, you know, somebody gave me a bag of this or that and said some fancy name that meant nothing to me and said, it works. I believed it without a doubt. I come here and say, or you guys tell me, says, oh, just work these steps, it works. Oh, yeah? Go figure. But I did. I worked those steps, and I accepted the help, and I got clean. You know, today I've met people from all over the world. You know, from Japan, Philippines, India. You know, there's one of the newer members that just moved to our area last year. He's quite a few years clean, and he's from India. You know, and it's neat, you know, to listen to the stories and realize that it doesn't matter where I am. It's what's inside, you know. The disease of addiction is all over the world. It doesn't discriminate. It doesn't matter whether I'm tall or short, fat or ugly, skinny or beautiful, rich or poor, black or white, or somewhere in between. I can have this disease called addiction. And for me, it's so important that the doors be open for everybody that potentially could have this disease. Because this disease does kill, you know. I buried a lot of friends and relatives because of this disease. And today, I don't want to be among that number, you know. Today, I want to live and enjoy life without the use of drugs. And I know by coming here, I can do that. And it's just such an incredible feeling to be able to have people in my life. I've known people in recovery for 20 years now, you know, and that's something that is just incredible, you know. Friendships, so tight. And I ran into a few friends that I haven't seen for quite a few years from Minnesota just earlier today, you know, and it's like we connect and talk, and it's like we were just having coffee last week. You know, it doesn't change. One of the things I find, though, is that with this disease, is I'm not cured. I'm in 1990. I was at a function in Fargo, North Dakota. There's about 200 addicts there, and you know, the workshops went fine, the dinner went fine, the speaker went fine, and then the dance started. And I had just ended a relationship that I was in. I think it was like the 50th time I ended that relationship in 2 years. I was even getting sick sharing about it. It finally did end for good. But at that point, I just ended it, and I started to feel really alone and lonely, and watching all these people dancing and having fun. And I left the dance area to go out into the hallway, and I sat in one of these big chairs, and I'm watching people milling about. And by this time in the night, people stop saying, "How's it going?" You know, and it's like earlier during the day, people see a smile, say, "Hey, how's it going? How's it going?" And by this point, it kind of stopped, and people are milling about. And what's really neat is that I could realize that I was sinking into an isolation within myself. I was in this function with like 200 people and feeling alone, feeling by myself, isolating inside. And I thought, geez, I need to talk to somebody. I need to get out of this. This is not a good place to be. But could I get off that chair and approach somebody? I couldn't. I'm looking at the people standing around the hallway, and it's like any one of them I could have approached and said, "Hey, I need to talk." But I wasn't doing that. I was scared. And the more fear that I was developing, the deeper into that isolation I was going. And I did the one thing that I knew what to do. I prayed. You know, I prayed for the strength to approach somebody and say, "Hey, I need to talk." You know, and I don't know why, it still amazes me, but it worked. You know, I made my prayers, and I got the strength that I needed, and I approached this individual. I was just at his workshop earlier today, you know, and I said, "Buddy, I need to talk. I'm isolating." And I had to spit it out like that. And he said, "Sure." So he went walking. And, you know, and it took me right out of my isolation. You know, I started to feel a part of again. That loneliness went away. I wasn't alone. And I know one of the big things that helps me keep that is my connection with my higher power. You know, like I have the physical people in my life, you know, and without a doubt, I know that I can go anywhere in the world where there's a Narcotics Anonymous meeting and feel right at home. You know, it's like when we were out on the Hana Highway, we went to Hana and went to a meeting there. You know, it was very similar to my home group, except instead of being in the basement, and in the basement of the church, we were on the back steps in the courtyard in the grass. You know, but the feelings that were there, the similarities. The town that I live in is about 13,000-14,000 people, so it's fairly small. And that meeting also had a nice little rural feel to it. And it's like, oh, I'm at home here. You know, this is home. And wherever I go. So physically, you know, I know that that's out there, without a doubt. But for me today, too, there's that higher power connection that really helps center me. And where that I can be alone with myself today. You know, sometimes one of the sayings that I hear a lot is you know, an addict alone is in bad company. You know, for me today, for my life, that's not true. Today, I'm damn good company. You know, I'm at ease with myself. You know, I'm at peace in my head, my heart, and my gut. And that's through the connection with my higher power that I'm able to have that. That I'm able to be okay with me. Because there's only one place that I have to live, and that's in my own skin. And as long as I'm living these principles to the best of my ability, I'll be okay in my own skin. So when my stomach starts rumbling, and my heart starts getting tight, my brain starts thinking, I know that there's something that's not right. Something that I need to examine, something I need to change. And I'm able to do that. You know, it's kind of funny. they pulled an intervention on me just last month at a convention. You know, three people that really love me. You know, and it's like a lot of my life growing up as a little kid, I just wanted to be loved, you know, and never felt that I was. And here in this program, I'm loved like I never imagined. So I also have diabetes, and I'm on insulin and a whole bunch of other medications, and I'm overweight, which is not healthy for me. I don't exercise, which is still not healthy for me. And over the years, I've eaten properly and I've exercised, and I know the results are positive. But in the last 3 months or so, I haven't been doing anything like that. I've been taking my meds and my insulin. And it's like getting to a point where I just didn't care, you know. Thank you. You know, where I couldn't care for myself. You know, they cared for me, you know. It's like I was triple tag teamed in a hotel room, you know. And it's like feeling like I was newcomer again, 2 days clean, you know. But it worked, you know. And it helped me to care for myself again. You know, it gave me that, you know, that yes, I'm worth it, you know, that I am worth it, you know, and I have to make the choice on what I'm going to do with my life, you know. So it's like even all this time here visiting Hawaii, you know, trying to make proper food choices. I've exercised a lot, though, walking through the jungle and the lava fields. The only trouble with that, though, is I want to rationalize and say, oh, good, now I don't have to exercise for a week. I didn't. But, you know, it's like I'm not alone, you know, and I don't have to be, and people care and love me. And that is just a wonderful, wonderful experience. And, you know, so with my higher power and with the people in this program, I truly don't have to be alone. You know, there's some times where I like to be alone, you know, where I like to be just with myself. And that's different than isolating. You know, and it took me a while to come to that point between the difference between just being alone and time for me and isolating. You know, but over time, I've come to draw those lines. I brought this watch up here so I can monitor how long I talk, because I'm one of these people that I can start and just keep going and going and going. And so I know that when I've spoken in the past, I've always taken my watch so that I can monitor and I don't talk too long. But I kind of forgot to look at what time I started. Okay, so I was told I have some time left. You know, I'm still human. And that's always a nice thing. My home group just a few weeks ago, you know, I was sharing about what I just shared about with the diabetes and the intervention and how I was kind of screwed up over that. And one of our members was all happy. You know, not that I was in misery, but that I am human. You know, and that even though I have all this clean time and I generally have positive things to share, that life on life's terms can still happen to me. And that, more importantly, I can stay clean. You know, that no matter what happens today, I don't have to use. So as long as I keep doing what I'm doing, you know, I really believe without a doubt that I'll stay clean today. You know, I keep going to meetings, you know, because that's where I run into people. You know, I heard other speakers talking about, you know, other people questioning, well, why'd you still go there? You know, it's like, I've been going to meetings for over 20 years now, and I still go regularly, generally 3-4 meetings a week. And people say, well, why do you still go to all those meetings for? You have all this clean time. And it's like, well, I heard once that some are sicker than others. I think I might be one of the sicker ones, and I need these meetings. I know what happens when I don't go to these meetings. You know, I moved away from the community that I got clean at to an isolated community, and I really cut back on the amount of meetings I was going to. And I was 6 years clean, and I wanted to die. You know, I felt alone, I felt isolated, and that was not a fun place to be. You know, thankfully I stayed alive, I prayed, and I went to a meeting. And I realized I need to keep the basics. I need to continue going to meetings, which, like I said, I still do, even on holidays here, went to meetings on the other islands. You know, I need to continue to communicate with my sponsor. The way I communicate with my sponsor today is not the same as it was 15, 20 years ago, or even 10 years ago. This stuff works, you know. It told me that my life would get better. And it has gotten better, you know. Now, you know, not every situation is a crisis that I need to call my sponsor. You know, in the past, I'd stub my toe in the morning and that's it. My whole week was shot. Now I can stub my toe, swear about it, and then move on with my day. But I still need to connect with my sponsor every so often. Now, I connect more with email now than the phone. We live in different cities. I'm grateful for email. I do a lot with email. You know, and you know, a lot of times it's a sounding board, and I'll look at where I'm at, and I'll send things back and forth. You know, the steps. I've done several sets of steps over the years. My first 6 years clean, I did a set of steps every year, and I've kind of slowed down since then. And I still try to live them to the best of my ability. And then, of course, service. Service has always been a big part of my recovery, even before I knew what service was. My early meetings, I remember the chairperson would ask, can we have help cleaning up, dump the ashtrays in this red bucket and put the chairs against the wall? And here I am at this meeting. I'd pick up this ashtray, walk to the back, and dump it into the bucket. That's how long I've been around. We used to smoke in the meetings. And it's like, it's amazing that I was emptying this ashtray, because you come to my house at that time and my ashtrays were so full you could barely flick another ash on it. I didn't know that was service, you know. And since then, I've had the opportunity to be involved with service at all levels. You know, I got to help form the Canadian Assembly. I helped form the Winnipeg area, which is now the Manitoba area. You know, and I've met some of the most incredible people through my service experiences. Quite a few of them are here at this convention this weekend that I met 10 plus years ago, you know, and that connection is still there. It's like, I really am not alone. And it's like, the geographic countdown tonight, for those that have not been at a world convention before, is something that is incredible. You know, when we see how far-reaching around the world this program really is, it's incredible to know that, yes, I really am not alone. I'm going to wrap it up here. As I heard some people say that and then talk for another half hour. So I'll really try not to. I'm not sure what this experience has to do with not being alone, but it's something that happened in my recovery that is very, very important to me, and it was a turning point for me. It starts way before I got into recovery. In the summer of 1980, I rolled my pickup truck off the highway, and I was using, and I got some severe injuries, dislocated shoulders, a bunch of scrapes and scratches, and severe head injuries that the doctors didn't think I'd come back from, and a broken neck. I was told that if I broke my neck about a half inch lower, I would have been paralyzed from the neck down. And like I said, my brains were scrambled up for a couple of weeks, And the doctors are amazed that my brains came back, that I didn't stay a vegetable. And, you know, I'm laying in the hospital bed in traction. And not once did I say, oh, thank God I'm not paralyzed. Thank God I can still function. Thank God I'm alive. None of that. It was, hey, Mike does it again. Mike pulls through again. You know, I've since made my peace with that, and I've thanked my higher power for that. You know, and I got out of the hospital and kept right on using. Some people find that incredible that after that accident I keep using. That's not what got you clean? No. One of my aunts, well, actually it's my mom's aunt, so I guess my great aunt is a nun. She just celebrated like 70 years as a nun or something. And she's old. And in 1984, Pope John Paul came to Winnipeg, and I was still using. And I left my apartment to go score, and I get to this Broadway in Winnipeg, and people are lined up along the street, and I don't have a clue what's going on. And the cops are there and blocking traffic, and I ask somebody standing in the crowd, what's going on? I said, oh, the Pope's coming. The Pope? I didn't even know he was in town. He didn't call me. Yeah, I was a good Catholic boy for a few years. I'm recovered from that, too. Hopefully I didn't offend anybody. That's not my goal. But I waited, and I had to wait 10 minutes, and the Pope mobile came by, and he waved to the crowd, and the big bulletproof thing, and he drove by, because he was going to do a service at this church downtown Winnipeg. And he passed by, and then the crowd's cleared, and I could go score. I was telling this story, and my aunt got all excited. She says, when you saw the Pope, that's when you got clean. And I says, no. It just slowed me down for 10 minutes. But anyway, I kept using. So I had all these injuries, and several months after I got out of the hospital, a friend of mine died in a plane crash. He was in a little, I can't remember, a little Cessna kind of bush plane with a friend of his, and they hit some bad weather and crashed. And that hit me pretty hard, you know, and I remember talking to his mom about it, and then when I was finished, it was like, why did he die? Why did I live? And that was very different. Like, I remember as a teenager at parties, contemplating the meaning of life and why am I on the planet and all those kind of deep, meaningful, stoned out conversations. But this was very different. It went right down to the core of who I was, you know. It's like, well, why did I live? Why did I live? Why did he die? And it turns out that some days later, some Jehovah Witnesses came to my door. So I invited them in because I thought, they'll tell me. And I asked them point blank, says, why did he die? Why did I live? They gave me an answer. Unfortunately, their answer didn't work for me. It worked for them, but it didn't work for me. I thanked them, bought a little book off them, and told them to come back another time. And I went on with my life like that. And never really going away, always thinking in the back of my head, you know, why did he die? Why did I live? And it was, I guess I was around a couple of years clean, you know, and I got an answer to that. And that was that my God had a purpose for me. That was to share the joy of recovery. That's why I didn't die in that crash, you know, and that, I felt good about that. And a few years later, I was student teaching I don't know if I mentioned that, I guess when I was talking that, I'm a high school teacher. When I was in school, I was student teaching at the Mennonite Brethren Collegiate in Winnipeg. That's a private school for children of the Mennonite faith. And one of the classes that my cooperating teacher taught was a Bible study. So he asked me to talk to the students about my experiences with drugs, my experiences with NA, and my faith in God. You know, and I did that. And the following summer, I had a job in downtown Winnipeg at the Manitoba Indian Education Association as an interim counselor between semesters. And I was a little late this one morning, and I was rushing to the office, and there used to be a big department store right downtown that people would wait for their buses, a lot of different bus routes there, and there's always a crowd of people there. And I'm rushing in front of this crowd, and all of a sudden I hear from this voice from the crowd, "Mr. Bolio, Mr. Bolio." So, and I stop and I look, and this young girl, about 15, comes walking up to me and says, "I don't know if you know who I am." I says, "No, sorry, I don't." Turns out that she was in that class when I talked about drugs and NA and my faith in God. And at that point in her life, she had started experimenting with drugs. And she smiled and said, "Thank you." Because she had chose a different path from where she was on because of what I had to share, because of the message of Narcotics Anonymous. And it became real for me that day, you know, that my purpose, why I didn't die, was to share the joy of recovery. That an addict, any addict, can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Thank you.
I'd like to thank our speakers once again. Thank you. At this time, I've asked another addict to read "We Do Recover."
Hello, everyone. My name is Benny. I'm an addict. I'm from Northfield, New Jersey. We do recover. When at the end of the road we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative, either go on as best as we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts have ever have had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you.
Okay, let's make a circle and close with the third step prayer.